Bienvenidos a Area Graruru. Es una podcast sobre anime. Soy este.
Yeah. Get your terrorists to be kind of our podcast.
What?
Get your terrorists to be kind of our podcast.
Okay, yeah, it's all right because I was messing up my Spanish anyways. You're not supposed to say soy as, you're just supposed to say soy Jefferson. Whatever. I was messing up my Spanish. Anime guru, all right. You're Irish, so that means you're a terrorist, and I'm brown, so that means I'm a terrorist. And you're Irish because your teacher is Irish, so that's you don't need to say anything else. So.
All right. I mean, I guess I do have Irish roots, kind of.
Yeah. So I mean, that means you're a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I mean,
Asians really aren't terrorists. Unless you're a Mexican, then you may be a terrorist.
Well, I mean, whatever. Okay. We're supposed to review Umineko. That's not happening.
I did not finish it. I'm sorry. I should have finished it.
So, instead, we're going to talk about a show that's better. Not a show, a movie. By the late, no, not late, still alive, Mamoru Oshii. The Skycrawlers. Where to get started? Have you seen this movie yet?
No, I have not.
Mamoru Oshii, he has, like, a following within the anime community, and you think some, like, non-anime fans, like theater people, watch it?
I think Ghost in the Shell, like, in the late 90s, various reasons, did get maybe a couple of kind of non-anime fans into his stuff, because that was kind of, that was pretty big and kind of mainstream, actually. Like, Roger Ebert gave that big review. I remember they had U2 do, like, do the song of it. So I think Ghost in the Shell might have gotten him some non-anime fans.
Okay. And I know, like, a bunch of hackers really like Ghost in the Shell, like, who are hardcore hackers. Whose job is basically to hack into networks so that they can expose security flaws in the networks. And they're like crazy people who, if like, you're around them, they're already in your cell phone.
Shit, that sounds like an awful person to have as a friend.
But apparently they're really cool. But nonetheless, Oshii, he had originally wanted to basically be a priest. And he had seriously contemplated, like, where did they go? I forgot. Going to the...
The street or something? I don't know. I know nothing about religion.
It was some, like, why am I forgetting this? Because I know, like, some people who are also seriously considering this. But, goddammit, it's like a serious place where you go and then you basically get... you basically, like, become an accredited priest or pastor. Seminary, yeah, I think that's it, but I don't remember. And along with that, basically came a lot of him studying, like, the Bible and Christian philosophy. And in a lot of his works, you can see, like, Christian overtones or Christianity used symbols used in one way or another. Ghost in the Shell is definitely a great example. Pat Labor movies, like even the first one, used...
More so the first one than the second one. The first one was a lot of kind of theological quoting. The second one kind of doesn't.
But the first one was weird in that it was just an action movie. And Oshii's very good at making action, and he made this comment like, a lot of people want him to make action, but he doesn't always want to make action.
Yeah, he's definitely good at directing those scenes. I don't even know if I'd call that first part of the movie an action movie. It's more like a kind of...
A detective like, story.
Yeah, like a detective story of a lot of unfunny comedy and a long time to get to climax. Have you ever seen that Jonathan Ross show, Jeff Panorama?
No.
He interviewed Oshii, and like he was saying that he felt the good thing about Asian cinema was that their stuff was more about setting than story. And his problem with American cinema was it was too focused on story.
Hmm. Yeah, in terms of story, it's exactly like that. It's not strong on, like, some overarching conflicts. And while there is definitely a lot of world building, it doesn't necessarily feel entirely about setting. I mean, I guess you could say that it is, but it's not really.
What is this movie actually about? Because all I know about it is that there are jet planes, and there's something called Kildren, and the main character falls over at one point.
Okay. So to get started, the Skycrawlers is about this company of fighter pilots. And they basically go out, and then they fight other planes. And we see the main character, his name's Yuichi, and he comes in, he flies in, very beautiful opening shot, and flies in, and normally he's gonna get a plane that basically belongs to someone else, it's not a new plane. Normally what happens is that the pilot, the previous pilot of that plane is supposed to come out and greet you, but he doesn't. So automatically we're given a mystery of, oh, what's going on? And as we develop this mystery, we develop the world of the Skycrawlers. And the characters, or most of the characters in this show, are what is called Kildren. Now, what Kildren are people who were, like, basically a genetic accident by scientists. And it was discovered that they basically live forever, and they're all teenagers, stuck being teenagers. And the only way they...
That's where the kind of whole, this is actually about Oscar thing comes in. I guess. That's what I've always heard about this movie, is it's like him just, you know, taking down, like, Hikikomori, and, like, it's all about Oscar culture and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is what I've always heard.
I mean, I guess you could have the discussion, and I do intend to, and we will definitely get to that. But for the Kildren... The only, like, one of the characters said specifically, the only way that they die is if they died in combat. And along with the sense of, like, otakudom and hikikomoridom, time means nothing to these guys. It's like one day just seems to bleed into another. The character, the protagonist Yuichi says, basically tells another character, wow, I don't really care how long I've been here. I think I've been here since the end of the summer. I don't really know.
That's what summer holidays feel like. Like, the days just kind of blend into one. You're like, fuck, I'm just wasting my life watching anime and waking up at 3 p.m. And I don't even know what day it is anymore.
Yeah. And there's another great scene where he is asked by, like, tourists who are visiting the airbase, if he marks his plane for how many kills he gets. And he says, some pilots do that. I don't care. And the thing is, if he marked his plane, he'd probably have a plane full of marks, because when he gets there, he's basically their ace pilot. And he just kind of dreamily just walks through life. And you could also say the fact that the characters smoke so much could also show that they don't really care about their future. And there's a really cool line where Yuichi says to someone, who needs to grow up when they can die tomorrow? Because they are Kildren, they can literally die tomorrow because they're fighting a war. Although, it's a really weird war because there doesn't really seem to be a need for the war. While most war movies develop this idea that war is bad, and the Skycrawlers kind of goes into the idea of war being bad. It's really bizarre the way it treats this war, because in the world of the Skycrawlers, we basically achieve this peaceful world where people aren't, like, being wiped out by nuclear bombs, and people are actually moving forward. But we have this war, and the language that they use to describe how it fights seems less like the language of a nation's military, but more like a corporation. And it's slowly hinted throughout the show that they're basically just a corporation. They describe, like, their base as a company, and they almost describe it as, like, a corporate, basically, their enemy, almost like the relationship between the two entities as, like, a corporate rivalry. And at no point is it ever hinted that this fight that they're fighting is that between states. It just seems to be that they're just fighting other pilots. So you really do get this sense that nobody's really moving forward and it's all stagnant. This movie has a lot of cool ideas, but I think before I kind of want to get into that, there are some cool technical things I want to talk about. The animation in this is absolutely gorgeous. And the dogfight scenes are amazing, and they're animated in 3D. And there is this interesting discussion between Oshi and, I can't remember his name, a guy who worked with Miyazaki at Ghibli. I'll get the interview up, the transcript for it. And Oshi basically said that you can't realistically make a movie like this entirely with traditional animation. Because, for one thing, it's hard to do traditional animation, and not many people are willing to do it today within Japan. So, realistically speaking, they had to do it in 3D. And I really do like the use of 3D in his movies because they shade it in a way that makes it blend in, and it's not, like, ugly like a lot of 3D stuff.
I don't know, man. The 3D in the second Ghost in the Shell movie was not good.
I haven't seen the second Ghost in the Shell movie, so I can't talk about it. So.
But just on that, you know, what you were saying there, another big thing is that there's less kind of mecha people in the industry right now who will draw and design these planes. Like, we're really kind of clinging on to less people. Like, when you think of the big mecha designers right now, it's stuff who, like, they were still working, like, in the 70s and stuff. There's no real new talent for that.
Yeah.
It's still, like, Arrow is doing a bunch of this stuff.
And Oshi even said, hey, you know all those people who are really good at traditional animation? When I started, they were like 20. Now they're like 40. And are there new kids? No. And he said the way that the animation industry had basically come together in the 1980s was that people would just come together. Now they have to actively recruit, meaning that we probably won't have any more purely traditional animated movies. I mean, except maybe Miyazaki movies. But those are hard.
Well, I think we'll probably still have traditionally, at least in terms of, like, they will be hand-drawn or, you know, like, digitally drawn. It won't be completely 3D CGI, I don't think. It'll just be the stuff, like, the cars and the environments will become CGI.
Yeah, and I don't really have that much of a problem with it if they manage to shade it right.
I don't know. I kind of have a problem with, like, I'm seeing more and more backgrounds being kind of CGI and stuff, and more kind of character models kind of, like, in that show C, they really overuse CGI for the character models, and it is kind of off-putting.
I mean, aside from that, they basically animated the dogfights, like, almost basically in CG, so whenever they're flying in the sky, it's mostly all computer animated, but I think the characters weren't, but, like, you couldn't see any of the characters' faces. They all had, like, masks, the mask for the fighter pilots on. And another thing that's really technically cool about this movie is that, like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, they basically said, no, we're not going to use Toei's animation sounds vault. We're going to go over to America to Skywalker Sounds, and we're going to have them do the sound effects for this movie. And it sounds different from a lot of other anime shows and movies because it is different. Because they're using Hollywood to basically develop their movies. And in a cool, like, extras and, like, a making of that came with the DVD, He said Oshii said that he liked to work with Hollywood types because they had like more input in terms of like creating things. I mean, I don't know all the culture between that, but those were Oshii's comments. So I think if we see another Oshii movie, we might see more of this going to America to get cool sound effects for movies, which I think is cool because it really adds some nice variety. And I suppose another cool thing is that what Oshii did to basically help develop his movie is, like, he took some guys out with him, like, to actually go to, like, Norway and Ireland to get, like, on-the-spot research for for the movie. So they'd be at, like, a Norwegian Air Force base, like, checking out, like, taking pictures everywhere. It's almost, like, touristy, but it was really kind of cool. And they basically tried to make this as authentic as they possibly could, but, and you could see that in the animation because the planes definitely look World War II inspired, although they do kind of have a more modern design. They do have that classic look, which is kind of weird because it seems as though the world has advanced beyond World War II, but that aside, their on-the-spot research definitely comes through because the background definitely looks like they're in Europe, and they did put a lot of care into the show. And it just seemed as though Oshii worked production IG to the bone. They're all like, whoa, this is hard. We're partying right now, but I think we should probably be working.
Like, so it doesn't sound... animators. This isn't set in any like specific time or place. Is it just kind of vague about that?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of vague. It's hinted that it might potentially be like in the future because like the whole concept of children and genetic engineering kind of sets it in its own world. So I mean, I would definitely describe, like, the world to be a bit more futuristic, although at times it feels as though the technology that they're using seems like it's a bit dated.
Well, I guess a big thing for, like, Ultimate History, I mean, just look at his Kerberos Panzer Corps stuff, which is all set in kind of like a what-if Germany won World War II.
Hmm. Yes. It was really technically well put together, like a movie should be, and it looks gorgeous, and if you like looking at pretty things, this show definitely takes that, and if you like your anime to sound really nice, this movie sounds really nice. It sounds realistic.
Did Kenji Kawai do the music like he did for some of his other movies?
Let me look it up. I think he did. Not too sure. Because I think I saw his name pop up.
Yeah,
Kenji Kawai, yes.
Cool. So I guess I would just ask, like, what is the message of this movie? Or, like, what is it kind of leaning towards? Because that seems like the big thing of all of Oshii's stuff, is it kind of... He's usually got some kind of philosophical point he's trying to get across.
Yeah, that was some good timing because I was about to just go there and I need some transition. Okay. Like Andy said, an Oshii movie is all about the message. And I read some reviews. A lot of them were fairly good. But basically, it seems as though everyone's thinking that this is an anti-otaku movie, but I don't really think that's necessarily where he's going.
Well, can I tell you why everybody thinks it's an anti-otaku movie?
Yeah, you can go ahead and do that.
It's because at the New York premiere, there was like a video of him before it in which he said it was an anti-otaku movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, they mentioned that in Ninja Consultants podcast, and I think Dallas Vats mentioned that too, that he came out and said that, yeah, like, the Kill of the Night meant to be otaku. But just from hearing you describe it, that makes sense, because what you're describing is people who are never aging, are, like, constantly in their teenage years, and, like, never grow up. That does sound kind of like the otaku culture, kind of being infantilized your whole life, and just kind of staying in your teenage years, and never really kind of growing and developing. But I haven't seen this movie, so I guess I'll let you go ahead.
I wasn't entirely sure. I mean, I could kind of see it almost against that, but I suppose the case for it is a little bit stronger. But basically, there's a guy in the show. He's known as the teacher. Most of the characters, like I said, are children. They don't grow up. And the teacher is basically the enemy fighter. You never see the teacher's face. And he only makes an appearance in his plane. So we never actually see him. We only see his plane. But what we know about the teacher is that he was once one of them, but he left the company, and then he went to another company, and then he grew up. So, like, he left home, and then he became a man. And because of that, he's supposedly, like, the best fighter pilot in the world. And he goes to places, and if you fight him, you're pretty much gone. You think I should go ahead and basically just give away the ending?
I'm going to have to leave the room if you give away the ending.
Okay, I guess I won't. But I really like how he only appears in the sky, because I could sense a lot of, like, undertones to Plato to this movie, and in some of his discussion in, like, the making of, I could kind of sense some, like, Neoplatonic view of life, because the teacher, he basically comes above you, and he basically does, like, the traditional mode of attack when you're a dogfighting, that is, you have the sun at your back so that your enemy can't really see you, and because he's always higher up there, it means that as an adult, he's higher above them and higher than everybody. And also as an adult, he's better than everybody at piloting. While he will probably die, it basically presents itself that growing up and moving forward is indeed something to do. And one of the characters, Suito Kusanagi, he's basically the lover to the protagonist, Yuichi, comes out and says, "Hey, you know the world of children? This shit is fucked up." Of course, this is basically the only moment in the film that we actually see any of her being a person. Because throughout the movie, she basically just kind of has this blank, I don't give a fuck face. And she's always, like, smoking a cigar or a cigarette. And
Sounds like the major, kind of.
Kind of, and
this thing for doll-like girls, I guess.
And she is totally doll-like. But, I suppose, like, you could say that it's almost like a harem. Just kind of. Because the main character, Yuichi, doesn't really have much of a personality. She's just like a teenager who dreamily walks through life. And he encounters several different women throughout the show. There's a prostitute, there's Suito, and then there's another pilot girl, and then there's Suito's daughter. Although it's, like, just friends, she's arguably a moe girl. Because she's just, like, I don't know, 8, 12-year-old girl comes in all cute, and then she has some sort of, like, childlike innocence, you know? So, basically, the main character, Suito, it seems as though he can have his pick. because he has, like, all these different women who seem to like him for no reason at all. So in that sense, it is almost kind of like a harem show, but you could say that it's almost a deconstruction of a harem show, saying that, this is kind of messed up. And you do get this sense throughout the movie that by presenting this bleak, non-progressive worlds, that it basically reaffirms our value in progress and our values in failure and this existential need to grow up. But there was, like, one part that was a little bit concerning, and I think it was in the development of Yuichi and basically his justification for this dreamlike state that kind of made me think that perhaps it wasn't entirely anti-otaku, because Suito, she is miserable because she wants to bring the endless cycle of the world to an end. Because it's kind of messed up. She wants to move forward, and she wants to grow up, but she doesn't really know how, except perhaps killing herself, and thus ending the cycle. But, damn it, where was my train of thought? Yes, there it is. What Yuichi says in one scene is that even if you walk the same road every day, you could just walk on the other side of the road and get a different perspective of the road. Now, reviews and analysis that I've read of this movie say that it's just Yuichi basically deluding himself with him experiencing anything new. But there was, like, one part where Oshii said, you don't have to travel the world to live a fulfilled life. You can stay in one place and live a fulfilled life. Because even if someone does travel the world and have all these great experiences, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've lived the full life. Because we always need to be looking at the world from different perspectives and learning from different perspectives. And it seems as though Yuichi in his dreamlike state was kind of doing that. Although the way he was kind of doing that was basically forgetting everything, which is kind of interesting, because it is through the faculty of forgetting do we actually regain our sense of wonder. It's basically the reason why cannabis is such a powerful drug, is because it overstimulates the cannabinoids that your brain naturally produces, and basically makes you forget, like, everything, and gives you short-term memory loss. So it's like when you're eating a burger, you're like, damn, this is fine-ass burger. Because it's like you're experiencing things over and over again. It's even if it's the same thing, because you've forgotten it, you can focus on it. And the faculty of forgetting is a very, very important faculty that you could not function without. So I suppose that there is some sort of golden mean that you could approach it. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a pro-otaku show because of that. I would say that part in particular distracted me from the potential anti-otaku message.
Maybe it's just a comment on otaku more than, like, being against them for it.
True. But I think it's also just kind of like a way that we should live our life, because anybody who makes this comment basically says, yeah, this is a good way to live your life. It's how you can live a fulfilled life. It's how you can be content. But there is, like, one point where I believe Oshii says it in, like, the making of track, but you can definitely feel throughout the film, it's that you need to have something different every now and then. And pretty much everybody who sings the praise of Oshii basically says this: Oshii gives us something different. And even if it is a little weird, even if it is hard to follow, it's something new, and it gives me that sense of wonder and excitement that is the reason why I watch movies and is the reason why I watch anime. It's coming across movies like The Skycrawler that have so much effort put into them and are so original. That's the reason why I got into anime. That's the reason why I wanted to podcast, is because I thought, God damn, this is awesome. And because of that, I have to say that this is definitely a movie worth watching, and I think everybody should go see it, although you will have different experiences depending on where you are. An anime fan will probably get the anti-otaku message, while a non-anime fan, like just a film person, would probably just get like the overall message of the need for something different.
Yeah, I mean, Oshii is definitely one of those directors, like Sushi Khan was, and like Miyazaki is, or Isao Takahata, and that stuff doesn't even really feel like anime. It just feels like its own thing. It's kind of in its own paradigm. And that is kind of exciting, definitely. I do like that. It's almost like it can be compared to anime as a whole.
Yeah. Oshii even said in an interview, I don't care how my story gets told. If I have to make it in 3D, I will make it in 3D. Or if I have to make it in live action, I will make it in live action.
He just live action movies are bad, though, but yeah.
He says that animation gives him more control over his projects, because he can basically go through and like edit anything he wants. But like animation is a bit more difficult because you can't necessarily say, "Hey guys, let's reshoot this scene," even though we reshooted it 50. We basically shot it 50 times the other day, and I'm just editing this, and I want to remake this scene because the actors would probably be pissed off.
But yeah, well, you can't exactly reshoot an animated scene either because that costs a lot of money. But
yeah. So, all right.
I plan on watching this. Have you heard about what Oshii's next movie is going to be?
I'd vaguely heard that he was making one.
An adaptation of Tenchin 28. I am so, so in for that. That will be amazing.
Hell yeah!
Especially with anime, because that live-action Tenchin 28 was pretty god-awful, but he could make a really badass, kind of soul-searching, philosophical, dark Tenchin 28. I will watch the shit out of that.
Just have
slow pans of Tetsuo 28 and like, what's it called again? It's not Daisaku, it's
I'm pretty confident it's Daisaku. Yeah, it's Daisaku. What was his name in the pink called? I want to call him Murasame Kenji, but I think that might just be a giant robo. No, I think that is his name.
He was Kenji in Tetsuo 28, but I don't think that was Daisaku in Tetsuo 28. I think that was a similar character to Daisaku. It doesn't matter. Short kids. He'll be talking all about finality and how life is fleeting, and then we'll see Tetsuo 28 blowing some shit up.
And then we'll see Kenji smoking a cigarette in the background.
Yeah.
With a cup of coffee in his hand, looking off into the distance.
How he can never die, and life is meaningless now.
All right, this is Jefferson signing off.
This is Andrew. By the way, we should do Plat Labor 2 sometimes. I've actually seen that movie, and I have shit to say about it, so.
That's true. I need to go ahead and get that movie, too. I'm going to watch it.
Even though that'll be all like, hey, man, let's talk about Article 9 again.